Hi, my name is Wendy Wesley, and I'm a registered and licensed dietitian here in St. Pete, Florida. And this is the podcast St. Pete Eats, where we talk about food pantries, food policy, farmers, gardens, anything to do with the food scene that's kind of not restaurant related in St. Petersburg. And my guest today is Karen Steinemeyer, and she's been on my radar for a long time because in her retirement, she has taken on a very, very interesting cause and service to St. Petersburg. Karen cooks food in her home and brings it out to communities in St. Pete where people are hungry or possibly unhoused or both, and feeds them from the back of her car. And you know what, Karen, you're a renegade, and nobody told you to do this. Nobody tells you not to do this. And I like that about you, and that's why I wanted to talk to you. The other reason I wanted to talk to you today is I want to know what you see, observe about our unhoused population in St. Petersburg, because you really are boots on the streets.
Yes.
And so you just told me that the last time you served food was this past Tuesday, a couple days ago. Would you tell me where you served it, and would you tell me what you cooked?
What did I cook? I actually made gnocchi, which was pretty amazing because I cooked for about 30 or 40 people. It depends how many show up. And this time, usually I cook big pans of food. It's super hot. I put it on trays and put it in the back of my car. And head out with utensils and plates that people donate to me. But this time I cook from donations I receive. So whatever I get is what's in the pot for that week. So this was a 3-pound roll of frozen hamburger meat. Probably 2 bags of frozen mixed vegetables, a bag of cheese, and 3 packets of gnocchi that I had my mother, who's 90 years old, cut in half for me so that they could better soak in the sauce. So I cooked that up, and it smelled fabulous, and it tasted really good. And my habit is to put as much vegetables as possible into everything I cook. Fresh, if not frozen, because they still have more vitamins than in cans. So I try to avoid cans and use whatever I can get that's fresh. There's a lot to, and where do I feed? I consider myself to be the person who feeds the so-called non-mobile destitute. So these are real street people, so to say. I've sort of kept to my location of South St. Pete. I do come up and feed in Williams Park and help at Mirror Lake and go to St. Vincent de Paul's. But I have a little merry band of homeless and destitute people who hang out on 4th Street near McDonald's and Dollar General and so on and so forth. And ooh, I lost my connection. Sorry. So they sleep in Bartlett Park. Some of them sleep in garages that people let them sleep in. The people down there are a good amount of drug addicts that are down there. When you talk to them, you'll find out, though, that they became homeless before they became drug addicts. So this common misconception that drug addicts become homeless. Yes, I'm sure they do, but we have to be very careful with our houseless friends about making generalizations about how they got there. Most of them lost their housing, lost their job. Their relationship broke up. Many people have apartments together, which is normal with younger people. You know, you get together, you live together, and then something happens and it breaks up. So those people are there for all sorts of reasons. Most of the people I was looking today at the statistics, because the point and count for the homeless just took place at the end of January through the Pinellas Alliance, Homeless Alliance. So you can look up under PinellasHomeless.org. You can find the latest statistics, which drills down to everything. How many children of what sex? How many veterans? How many people in safe harbor are there for domestic violence reasons or whatever? So that gives us a pretty clear picture that the population is very mixed. And their resources are also mixed. Some of them you'll see, like we know from downtown, driving around with shopping carts or baby carriages. But others, and those are the people that I mostly have, they own what they're wearing. And one particular girl I know wears two blankets around her neck, and that's all she owns in this entire world. And I've watched her for the last 4 years. And sometimes I don't see her for months. But when I do see her, I'm really happy because I'm like, yes, she survived. For us that care for the homeless all the time, our biggest thing is seeing who's missing out of our little groups, mm-hmm. and then finding them elsewhere or running into them again. And seeing either their progress. I recently had a positive progress, which I think made all the work I do. My son and I, my son's 27, he lives in St. Pete, and he used to help me a lot. He's very busy now, but he's always helped me with my homeless adventures, I almost like to call them. But he and I fed on Christmas about 3 years ago, and we pulled up to this sort of kiosk type thing, you know, sort of food and drink, and on Martin Luther King North. And there were a bunch of guys lying around in the cold on Christmas Eve. And we got out to give them food. And the only guy that was awake said, I'm too high to eat, but let me make sure I'll put a plate next to everybody who's lying down so that when they wake up, and we gave them blankets and hats and food and warm tea, which is what we always do. And I hadn't seen him for 2 years. And the other day I saw him, and he actually is in recovery and looked really good. And I said to him, wow, it's so great to see you. And he's like, you remember me? And I'm like, absolutely, I do. And I'm happy to see you. And, you know, he's like, I'm still homeless, but I'm getting my act together. Mm-hmm. So we develop rapport with people. I have a double veteran family. It's the older son. He must be in his 50s. And his dad, who's in his 80s, they're both veterans. And they live together in St. Pete. And he drives around on a bicycle. But anyway, his dad always finds out when I'm feeding and sends him, go out there, that's the lady who knows how to cook.
So I'm curious about what drives your, what are you going to cook? What drives your recipe, if there is a recipe process? I assume you're kind of an intuitive cooker. You just know what you're doing, and you source ingredients and you put it together. Do you shop the sales, or do you receive any food from pantries or
yes.
or anything that you? And then do the pantries know that you're taking the food and will turn it into meals and turn it around and,
yes.
and give it out? Okay, and are they amenable to that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, one of my biggest food deliverers is Positive Impact.
Okay.
I also go and volunteer there with
okay.
them, so I feel like I'm not just taking
mm-hmm.
it to, but also, you know, helping out in the distribution. Yes, I basically have been cooking all over the world. I had an international airline career, so I traveled a lot, including, and we never stayed in hotels. We always stayed in local places. So My boys would go diving, and I would go take my Jeep and go on discovery of what there was to cook there. So I have a tendency of saying I could probably walk into any house anywhere in the world and be able to cook something with whatever's there.
Okay.
So I think it's this feeling for food. I can cook large amounts relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not daunted by cooking for 60 or even 200. I've done that. I do that occasionally. But I try to cook so that I can feed about, if I'm going on a big route and knowing I'm going to end up at St. Vincent de Paul's or in Unity Park, where we also go because we're not supposed to park at St. Vincent's anymore. I try to feed about 100 people. If I'm going to my little group, it'll be less. But most important for me is what I'm feeding them. I think that's the biggest reason people come to me and work with me is because of that experience. One needs to know that the majority aren't young people. It's mostly older people. And the majority of people who have lost their homes have no teeth. So bagels, hard things, chewy steak and things like that just don't work for them. So I found that using hamburger or hot dog rolls make the best sandwich option. And we don't use peanut butter and jelly because peanut butter and jelly is what they get fed in prison. And most of the homeless don't like eating peanut butter and jelly because it reminds them exactly of that. It's sort of, you didn't try. Is what it translates to. So I found that the thing they like most is something like turkey and cheese on a hamburger bun. So and I usually try to use things that are inexpensive. Mm-hmm. So instead of buying mayonnaise and mustard, I'll buy a bottle of ranch dressing because you can very easily do several dozen, if not hundreds of bread with that. So my mom and I have this little, so we do sandwiches to, I keep losing that, sandwiches to take along with the main meal. And then my thing is to always try to distribute fruit.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right.
Because a lot of people are giving out cookies and bagels and cakes and sweet things. And you'd be amazed if you give them an orange how happy they are because they'll say like, oh my gosh, an orange. You know, I haven't eaten an orange in like forever. So right now in the winter, you know, when mandarins are $2.99 a bag, there's 30 in them. And all I can say to people is hand them out. You know, really, a lot of people contact me and say, well, what should I do? You know, can I give you this to give to them? And I'm like, you can also do it yourself. Take a bag, put a bottle of water in it, put two mandarins in it, make two sandwiches, and put some wipes or some whatever, a spoon, some ramen noodles or soup in something. In other words, there's a lot of things we can do where the cost of packing 10 bags that you're going to take with you, if you know you're going into the city and you're going to stop at a lot of places or you're going to pass the park, do it. And you will never encounter, I don't think I've ever encountered in all the time, if I've run out of food, that somebody will get angry at me. Usually they say, honey, don't worry about it. Somebody else will come. Or you did what you could. In other words, there's so much positive feedback in what we do because we are trying to make a difference in their lives and they recognize that. And to me, the reason why I do it, which is part of your question, I like looking them in the eye. I like touching them on the arm. I like smiling at them because what I'm giving them is human dignity, okay? It's a meal or a fruit or a cup of tea or something, but it's about I saw you. I know you need something.
Okay.
What can I help you, you know? And with my regulars, if they need something specific, I mean, we get a lot of clothes donations, but I have people, they have size 14 feet. So I know who to get a pair of size 14 sneakers, okay? Or I know who to get certain things, because we have created with Kona and with other in our neighborhood associations and through our networks, we're a whole network of little people who work with the less fortunate. Okay. So we help each other out. Our problem is that we can't get grant money or assistance because we don't have a 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about it so many times, but the cost and the expense and all the things that needs to be done to do that, I don't know. We're always at the point where we'd rather put that money into getting what we need. Mm-hmm. If I can't get rolls or bread, then I'm going to go to Aldi and pick some up, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So that's what we do, and we mm-hmm. help each other out, and both through the Facebook page, the homeless helping the homeless, people on Buy Nothing will, St. Pete will say, oh, I have this, who can I give it to? And we're like, please put those things on helping the homeless on our Facebook page for St. Pete, mm-hmm. because there's always one of us in some part of town that can probably pick it up or share it with others or whatever. So our problem is finding space. My mom, when we can't get in the front door anymore because there's so many donated clothes, that's when my mom starts saying, are we ever going to get, you know, a space to put it back in? And I think I have 4 deck boxes outside my house where we just keep it, you know, it's winter is different from summer and summer is different from winter. So.
Now, Karen, you said that today you took a look at the latest numbers that were released on
yes.
the unhoused population. And I wanted to know, as we wrap up our talk, you said in a message to me that you have seen effects from Helene and Milton on our unhoused population.
Yes.
Families possibly living in automobiles
mm-hmm.
because they lost their homes. Can you talk a little bit about your observations about how the two storms have impacted our unhoused community in St. Petersburg?
Well, we've always had in Pinellas County and in St. Pete, depending on what parts of town. I mean, we do have a north-south divide
mm-hmm.
economically in St. Pete, and that, of course, affects the school children and the families in the low-income parts of town and housing. We have about 250 families living with their children in cars, with their small children in cars here in Pinellas County. So it's something that we really need to find ways to improve with, and I've spoken to the city several times. But right now I was looking at the reentry and immediate rehousing situation and was looking at the curve. How did it change from August, September, October to January and December? So there's less immediate rehousing. That's because a lot of the people who lost their homes or in the process of rebuilding their homes and have to wait for permits and stuff, they've gone into the other free housing that's there. So we're basically pushing a population. We're seeing a little bit of increase in that. Over the last couple of years, we've seen a massive increase of people over 70, which is something that very much worries us. Having people who are 83 years old and homeless all of a sudden after living in their houses or apartments for years and years. So that's a big problem, trying to convince people the way the Homeless Alliance does to let people in. It's a hard, you know, we believe in the continuum of care that says housing first and addiction relief after. But it's a really difficult subject. I think we just need to understand that this finger pointing is just wrong. You know, look at the veteran numbers. The VA should be taking care of this or whatever, you know, and if we look what's going on. So we see an increase. And amazingly enough, we have less Gulf veterans that are homeless, but we have lots of Vietnam veterans. If you look at the age scale, so we're talking about people who believe that the homeless people are young people who are doing drugs and alcohol, and I'm telling you these are people over 35 who have lost their homes, or and we have much mental health problems, which is a big thing. And I think that the hurricane situation, it's just made less housing available, and that which is there is even more expensive, because we're talking about 80% of the median income. But we have to understand, and this is why I often write concepts about things like showers and mailboxes and other things, because many of these people, including the veterans, are entitled to benefits. But if they have no address, they are not receiving this, okay? And some of them have to prove that they're not employed. Now, tell me, if I live on the street, I have no mailbox, I have nothing, how do I prove that I have no income and that I'm not employed? Mm-hmm. And people don't want to go into shelters, because everybody's like, just build more shelters and put them in there. But they're dangerous. There's a lot of rape there. There's a lot of violence, stealing. If all you own in your life is two bags of something, then you don't want to put them down anywhere, okay? You're limited by what you can take on the bus. You're limited by what you can take into the shelter. You're limited. This is why my pleading for years with the city has been build lockers. Build lockers in public places. I did a concept about thumbprint lockers. Everybody, you don't need a paper or whatever. It could be a mailbox. In other words, if you're at least entitled to some things that are going to help you advance, then there should be a way that that's provided, and not just to say, well, you don't have an address, so you don't get any help. And that's a message. And my other message is, please shy away from the attitude that if these people are really hungry or if they have nothing to wear, they'll eat or wear everything. They don't. They have very sensitive stomachs. I shy away from anything with tomato sauce, because they're like, oh, tomato sauce, you know, because don't remember, they have no place to go to the bathroom. And if we're feeding them huge amounts or large amounts of food that they're not used to, it's going to have a disastrous effect and nowhere for them to go. So the more we learn amongst each other about what to feed, it's a very important thing, and everybody can make a sandwich and hand out a bottle of water. You don't have to hand money through the car window. You can stand at the traffic light and say, hey, no, I can't give you. And they ask me every time, do you have a little bit? And I'm like, come on. I've been doing this for 4 years. You know I never give out money. I give out food. But I said, are you hungry? Do you need a pair of pants? I can do that, but, you know. But don't, and you can do that too. Keep water in your car in the summer. If you got a bag of hamburger rolls you didn't eat from your barbecue, make sandwiches, hand them out. You know, everybody will be happy. Hand out fruit. Apples are difficult. Bananas are great. Bananas, grapes, all types of citrus. The other day I gave somebody a grapefruit. They just about got on their knees and kissed my feet. Yeah. So, yeah.
I do remember that... one of the first or second times I met you, I believe it was at the Foundation for Healthy St. Pete, mm-hmm. and you and I started talking about food, and then I also learned that from social media that you were doing this work. And so I have been following you for a very, very long time, and I have this deep, deep kind of, it's definitely respect and admiration, and you are quite an interesting, unique person in our city, because you don't wait for rules or permission or to come under the auspices of a nonprofit or an agency. You fire up your stove and you make food and you put it out there. And yeah. I've always had a lot of respect for that kind of renegade entrepreneurial spirit. And I'm really happy that you're in my city doing that. And you've given me a couple of ideas for myself to do this, and because I cook too, and I've got food prep in me, and I also can have water in my car to give to somebody. Yes. So I thank you for coming on and talking about this,
me.
And then sharing your kind of really, really up close and personal observations of this part of our city, because it is, we are booming and growing and construction and glitter and glam, and sometimes I get tired of all that.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about real people in St. Pete doing real things for people who are suffering, because there's still a lot of people in our community who are suffering. So yes. I thank you very much for coming in and shedding some light on other parts of our city.
Yes.
Thank you very much,
Karen.
Thank
you for having me.
Thank you.